change the world, change the world, change the world.
Oh, yes, we can.
We can change the world, we can change the world, change the world.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Santita Jackson Show. Thank goodness it's Friday. I'm Santita Jackson. It's a joy to be with you on Friday, September 17th, 2021. Calling. I want to hear your voices today. Call me at 773-763-WCPT, 773-763-9278. Of course, that is my home station, WCPT 820, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station. And my other home station is AM 950 Radio, the voice of progressive Minnesota. It's a pleasure to be with you today. Hope that you've had a great week and hope you have a wonderful weekend. Text me at that number, 773-763-WCPT. GWC Injury Lawyers gives you the opportunity to do that, but I want to hear your voices today. We've got a lot to talk about today. Nicki Minaj has had quite the week. She stirred up a lot of controversy when she made a tweet, conveyed an experience that a relative had after having gotten the COVID-19 vaccine. And she's been assailed from many places, supported from some other places, too. So we're going to talk about that. And really, she brings into focus vaccine hesitancy and really black mistrust with respect to vaccines, and more specifically, more broadly, shall I say, the medical establishment. And then we're going to talk about President Biden's poll numbers, which continue to sink. What is going on? Is it Afghanistan? Is it the fact that we've not had real traction on voting rights and voter protections? What is going on, everybody? Is it? And how can he turn things around? Because we're just around the corner from 2022. What will it mean for him to have really not good numbers? How will that impact the Democrats? How do we go from 80 million votes, not even a year ago, to poll numbers at 42% approval? What do you think about that? Got to get some thoughts. We're going to have tremendous panels to talk about this today. And so let's get to some of these headlines, and we'll get right at this. Chicago, we're going to have a high of 87 degrees, mostly sunny. Minneapolis, St. Paul, 73 degrees, scattered thunderstorms. The Dow closed down 63 points yesterday. The NASDAQ closed up 20 points, and the S&P 500 closed down 6. In Major League Baseball, well, the Angels were triumphant over the White Sox, 9-3. And the Twins will be playing the Blue Jays today. And, oh, it was a blowout yesterday, but what an exciting game. The Phillies, 17. The Cubs, 8. And last night we had an NFL game, a squeaker. That's right, Washington, 30. The Giants, 29. Everybody, the J6 rally is on. What will happen tomorrow? The Department of Homeland Security warned yesterday about the potential for violence from people involved in or opposed to the Justice for J6 rally planned for Saturday in Washington, D.C., according to an unclassified intelligence briefing that was shared with state and local authorities obtained by CNN. The memo also warned of potential violence on the day before the rally. We will see, and certainly we will talk about that on Monday. In the meantime, European allies are grumbling over the new U.S. security deal with the United Kingdom and Australia. France, in particular, is upset over the agreement, which includes a deal for the U.S. to furnish nuclear-powered submarines to Australia. France already had a deal in place to provide conventional submarines to Australia, and the French foreign minister described the new agreement as a, quote, real stab in the back. EU officials have also expressed dismay, perhaps seeing the English-speaking alliance as a sign that Brussels is not taken seriously as a geopolitical player in the Indo-Pacific region, everybody. The White House has primed governors on how many Afghan refugees they can expect to be resettled in their states in the coming weeks. The initial tally of arrivals under the new Afghan placement and assistance program is roughly 37,000 persons. Most of these people who left Afghanistan in the final phases of the U.S. troop withdrawal there worked directly with the U.S. government. Is COVID-19 immunity waning among vaccinated people? If so, can COVID booster shots help? We're going to be talking with Dr. Deborah Verholden about that shortly, because the FDA is going to meet today to decide whether to approve boosters or not. As you know, two of their top officials resigned in protest. In fact, they have now signed on. They've become signatories on a letter on The Lancet, which is one of the world's foremost medical journals, urging people not to get the COVID vaccine boosters. What do you think about that, everybody? What do you think? Are you ready to do that? Who do you want to listen to? Who do you trust? Let's talk about that, everybody. Cruel and callous. That is what they're calling the Biden administration's plan to resume deportations to Haiti of Haitians. Infuriated human rights advocates from this Common Dreams report yesterday denounced the Biden administration for resuming deportation flights to Haiti, even as residents of the impoverished Caribbean island nation continued to struggle in the aftermath of last month's disastrous earthquake and tropical storm, which came amid the COVID-19 pandemic and in the wake of an ongoing political economic crisis in the wake of the assassination of their president. Indeed, the co-founder and executive director of the Haitian Bridge Alliance said, "We are in utter disbelief that the Biden administration would deport Haitians now." Hours after the 7.2 magnitude earthquake, President Biden released a statement saying that the United States was a friend of Haiti. A friend does not continuously inflict pain on another friend. What do you think about that? In the meantime, a judge has backed President Biden's from continuing to this inhumane Trump policy, they say, to deport families. And a major win for asylum seekers and human rights advocates, a federal judge on Thursday ordered President Joe Biden's administration to end a Trump policy administration policy of using COVID-19 to justify the swift deportation of migrant families. Can that apply to Haiti? We will see. We will see. One in six people say that they will quit their job if they cannot continue working from home. Are you amongst those persons? Most people now want a hybrid situation. What do you think about that, everybody? Are you someone who'd rather, who'd rather quit than switch? Remember that, and working from home, is it a deal breaker for you? This is a new survey that from FlexJobs that showed that more than 4,600 people, nearly 6 in 10 people said they want a fully remote job. They do not want to go back into the workplace. What do you think about that? And this is some news that is just really interesting and, quite frankly, a little sad. American politics might be in quite a state, but this is why 56% of Americans, only 56% of Americans, can name all three branches of government, a 15-year high. This is from the University of Pennsylvania's Annenberg Public Policy Center. Can you believe it? Now, that's a 15-year high. Only 56% of Americans. That's not even 6 in 10, everybody. I'm not going to round up. We have got to look at that, everybody, because that is not a good thing. That is not a good thing. We cannot name all three branches of government. And then you get upset when you have people who immigrate to the United States who understand our government fully. You know, we're so excited to have this gentleman. In fact, he's a great man of God. I'm one of my spiritual leaders, and I know that you will love hearing from him. He is the senior pastor of Ebenezer African American Episcopal Church in Fort Washington, Maryland, more than 8,000 members. And, of course, he co-pastors with his anointed wife, Pastor Joanne Browning. This is Reverend Dr. Granger Browning, one of our dear friends. The only thing that I can say that he doesn't have going for him is that he went to that other HU, Hampton University, but I'm going to let that go because he is absolutely a great man of God who's going to give us a good word today. I told you I had to say that to you today, all you Hampton people, you Hamptonians.
God bless you this morning.
God bless you.
You don't know that it was on today, September 17th, 1861, Hampton University was founded. And so I wish all my Hamptonians happy birthday on today. And I know there's some Howardites that want to spoil our birthday party, but we forgive them like Rodney King. Can't we all just get along?
You know, I'm going to do that because that's my grandmother's alma mater as well. Well, first it was my Aunt Constance's alma mater. I have much love for President Harvey and the Hampton family. I feel like I'm a child of Hampton, certainly a grandchild of Hampton. I love you all, and I certainly love you. I'm so glad that you're with us today, because we talk about
I'm
good news.
Howard.
See, no, that's where you got your master's in divinity.
Uh-huh. Exactly. So I have a little Howard in me, so I can't. I cannot dismiss Howard completely.
Thank you. We thank you for that. I wish you could see me on camera right now. You know, I'm so glad that you're going to share some good news with us today, because that's how we want to start the show. We, whatever your religious or spiritual commitment, or even if you don't have one, I certainly want people to walk away or start their day, if they're starting with us, or if they listen to the podcast on WCPT820.com/Santita. I want you to get something that's going to help you on your way. That old song, Stop by the Church Someday, Sometime. Something may be said that might help you on your way. And so I reached out to Reverend Dr. Granger Browning, and I'm so glad that you accepted this invitation to be with us today. So what's the good news, Pastor?
Well, first of all, it's my honor to be with you, and I'm so blessed to hear you continuing the great tradition of your father and mother of social advocacy and social justice and human rights. And so, again, we just are honored to be on today with you. But today, in the midst of a pandemic that seems to be ending, but every day you hear additional news how crisis is continuing to continue, not only in the United States, but literally across the world. I reflected back of when I guess our children were younger, and our daughter was probably about 5 or 6 years of age. We used to go to Orlando, Florida for summer vacation, and because she couldn't go on a lot of the rides at Disney World and Universal Studios, she was a little down, and so she saw that she could go to SeaWorld. And so when she saw that, there were no restrictions based on age or height. She was really excited about it. And on the day we were getting ready to go, she woke up and said, Mommy and Daddy, I'm going to touch the dolphins. And we realized how unlikely that was, that she'd be able to touch the dolphins. So we tried to, out of love, not get her too disappointed if it didn't happen. So we said, sweetheart, you know, it's unlikely that you'll ever be able to touch the dolphins. There'll be a lot of people there. But she kept saying, Mommy and Daddy, I'm going to touch the dolphins. I'm going to touch the dolphins. And so after trying to discourage her, we finally got on our way. And I'm sharing that because there might be some person today that feels something good is going to happen to you or something you're believing in. And persons, not out of any negative motive, but out of love sometimes, are discouraging you or trying to prevent you from having your hopes dashed. But as we got to SeaWorld, we got there a little late. And once again, she said, Mommy and Daddy, I'm going to touch the dolphins. And we said, no, I'm sorry, we're late, sweetheart. Chances are it's not going to happen. And as we were getting ready to go to our seats that were way in the back, one of the attendants saw our daughter and said, oh, you're such a cute little girl. And, you know, at 4 or 5, she looked at her and said, hi, thank you. And so the attendant said, come with me. And they took us from that crowd and brought us to what looked like kind of a VIP special interest. And lo and behold, we were given seats right in the very front. And about halfway through the dolphin show, the dolphins came up on this little ledge. And the person that was kind of conducting the show said, who wants to touch the dolphins? And lo and behold, our daughter raised her hand and she was picked. And so she went down to the little ledge and touched the dolphin and came back in her sweet, innocent way. She wasn't saying it in any kind of vindictive way. She said, I told you I was going to touch a dolphin. I told you so. I told you so. And so someone today, I just want you to get ready that somebody who's told you it can't happen, won't happen, that will come a day, if you keep the faith, that you'll be able to say, I told you so. And I know that's going to happen for me as a Christian, because there was a man by the name of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And he told his disciples and everyone around him that one day he was going to rise again on the third day. And when people saw what the religious leaders were doing towards him and the Roman government were doing towards him, they actually crucified him. During this time, there was no electric chair. Crucifixion was a death penalty, but they hung you on a cross, and it was not only to kill you, but also to embarrass you, because you had to hang there with no clothes on, and everybody was walking by. And someone, as you're holding on to a faith and a belief that things are going to change for you, persons are doing things and saying things that are not only hurtful, but also might be embarrassing and downgrading to you. After Friday, after Saturday, and then on Sunday, what he said was going to happen, happened. And he got up from the grave. And I'm assuming that when he got up from the grave, he told everyone who thought it could not happen, "I told you so. I told you so." And so today, someone, you need to hold on to a faith. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. And the Bible says, by it, you get a good report. And so I know it doesn't look like it's going to happen. Other people say it's not going to happen. But you hold on to that faith and believe, whatever it may be, your finances, your family, your job, your health, whatever it may be, if you have a sense that you're going to get through, make it through, I want you to know one day you'll be able to tell all the naysayers, "I told you so. I told you so. I told you so." So hopefully today, Santita, it's going to be a case by which people hold on to a faith and believe, even though it doesn't look like it, God is going to turn it around.
And I'm going to touch the dolphin. I told you so. Oh, I love that story. I love that story. And children, sometimes they can see things that we just cannot see.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Do I have time for another story, or that's it?
Please. No, really, I'd like to, because I would really, I've got about 4 minutes left in the segment, but I'd like to know what your, yes, I'd like another story, because I'd like to know what your takeaway, you and Pastor Joanne's takeaway was from that.
Yeah, my wife is recovering from 2 eye surgeries since May, and I just appreciate her resolve and her strength in the midst of all of that to believe that her right eye, the sight will return. It came from a bad cataract surgery about 25 years ago. Part of it has to do with the fact that when our grandchildren were real young, this is about when they were 3 or 4, I was cooking pancakes, and they had only gotten pancakes from McDonald's or IHOP, and so they had never actually seen it made before. And so I was put the pancake flour in the bowl, then I put 2 eggs in to make it taste a little bit better. Then I put the 2 tablespoons of oil to make it again taste a little bit better. Then you put the milk in. I stirred it all up. And they looked at it and said, "Papa, that's nothing but a soupy mess." And I said, "Well, just wait a second and you'll see that pancakes are on the way." I'm saying this because faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Everything that I needed to make pancakes, the substance of making pancakes, the egg, the pancake flour, the oil, and the milk was there. But it didn't look like anything. But faith is the substance of things hoped for. And I knew that pancakes could come from this. They didn't. But in order for it to come, it had to be put into a hot or onto a hot skillet. And so the skillet was hot, the pan was hot. I put the pancake batter into the pan, and lo and behold, within a few minutes, pancakes came. And our grandchildren said, "My goodness, I didn't know that it looked like this when it first began." Again, somebody, it doesn't look like it. It just looks like a soupy mess. But the skillet is you. You've got to have the faith to believe that if you are the skillet and you have the substance of what it takes for whatever you're believing for to come to pass, even though others may doubt it, it's going to happen. And then when our grandkids had the pancakes and they said, "Papa, it tastes so good. And what's your secret ingredient?" People said the egg or the milk. And then our grandson, who is 3, said love.
Oh, wow.
It's amazing what love can do. And so as folk doubt you, as folk sometimes don't see it, make sure it's always grounded in love. I think someone told me last night, grace. So make sure you always have the grace and the love, that even though others don't see it, sometimes it's not their fault. Matter of fact, Jesus said from the cross, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And your love for them and your grace about them, as you overcome, oftentimes that will allow them to come with you, because you're showing a type of love that, despite their lack of understanding, your faith will ignite faith in them in some day or some time in the future.
You've given us two great stories today, and I needed that. I need to be the skillet. Oh, my goodness. A soupy mess. Grandpa, Papa, this looks a mess. And then, wow. And I've got a young woman here who is a miracle. In fact, she is from your neck of the woods, comes out of Washington, D.C. in Baltimore. Dr. Deborah Furholden, one of the world's leading epidemiologists. We're so proud of her. She came out of Johns Hopkins with her Ph.D. in epidemiology at the age of 24. Full scholarship. She's a miracle.
My goodness.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. And she is she's now the Associate Dean of Public Health at Michigan State University. They brought her from Johns Hopkins to help to build their School of Public Health. And so when she comes back your way to Fort Washington, she's someone who needs to meet your congregation. They need to know her because she is brilliant, and she is fighting for equity, equal access to great health, to health care, to vaccines, to therapeutics, everything. Stay right here. I've got about a minute, Dr. Deborah Furholden. The FDA is going to be meeting today to talk about boosters. What should we be on the lookout for? Dr. Deb, is your brilliance on mute? That's okay. Dr. Deb, you still there? Well, that's okay. You know what? That's something I'm going to ask her on the other side of the break before we start talking about Nicki Minaj. Reverend Dr. Granger Browning, I cannot thank you enough for these stories today. And thank you. Everybody's saying, what a powerful word. That's right. Paula, Joyce, everybody, what a powerful word. And sometimes it's in these stories, our everyday lives, we can see God. Mm-hmm. We can see the miracles happening before us and within us and around us. Every day, I never will look at pancakes the same way again. I'm not kidding, because there's a sermon in that. There really is.
My goodness,
a soupy mess.
My goodness.
And then you had to prove these grandchildren wrong. My love to Pastor Joanne, and just I know that she has already been healed. She has already been
Amen.
Healed.
Amen. Amen. Amen.
Sending you
it's
much
my honor and blessing. Thank you so much and love. And prayers to your mother and father as well. We love you and God bless you.
We love you. Thank you so much. Pastor, Reverend Dr. Granger Browning, everybody, the senior pastor of Ebenezer AME Church in Fort Washington, Maryland, back with Nicki Minaj and COVID vaccines in just a minute.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Santita Jackson Show. It's WCPT 820, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station, AM 950 Radio, the voice of progressive Minnesota. I've been meeting a lot of, at least on the telephone, and other friends have been encountering so many people. So many of you who are part of the Santita Jackson Show family, thank you so much for your support. My father's optometrist at his rehabilitation center at Northwestern University. He listens to the show every day, and I want to thank him, and I want to thank all of you for your support. Continue to like and share, the show, so that we can continue to grow and expand our family. I love it, I love it, I love it, and I'm so glad that we're all together today. We were trying to get in touch with Dr. Deb, but with all of this new technology, she had on her earbuds, she couldn't find the phone, so all that brilliance was on mute. That's okay. Before we talk about Nicki Minaj, and this is a big story, and I want us to talk about that because there are a lot of layers to it. The FDA is going to be meeting today about these booster shots. Now, you have, it's a real issue because two of the leading officials at the FDA resigned over the booster shots. They said, we don't need them. They've signed on to a very important letter at The Lancet, one of the world's leading medical journals, and they are underscoring why they resigned and that we do not need boosters. What are we going to find out from the FDA today? What will the debate be about, Dr. Deborah Verholden?
The FDA's job is to review the data. You know, they are an agnostic group in that they don't have an agenda or an opinion or a point of view of their own or as a group that's based on their values or their beliefs or the, you know, ideologies or ideas of its members. They are very agnostic. What do the data tell us, point blank and simple? So it will be their job to review the data and to make recommendations based on what the data tell them. And the reason that they have said thus far, we are not coming forward with a recommendation for boosters, this is like a very smart move. It's two things. Number one, they don't have the data, and they had not reviewed the data to understand if boosters, one, offered significant benefit and any potential harm. So that's the first thing. The second thing is to prematurely recommend that for the people who are unvaccinated without reviewing the data, any kind of unintended or unanticipated harm will likely only fuel hesitancy among those who are already hesitant to get even an initial dose. So the FDA is doing their job, which is vetting and due diligence and reviewing the data before they rush to premature recommendations. And it's so odd to me that the White House would jump out in front of them. It's your own agency. It's like you have an expert in your life in charge of your car. Your mechanic has said, don't put that low octane in the car. Put the high octane in. And you just go to the gas station and put the low octane in anyway. You know, they are the authority. They are the agency to give us this recommendation after they've done their job. So we all just need to be patient, let them do their job. I've been saying this, and I'm going to say it again. I do not advise people to self-prescribe or just go and get a booster. Because in reality, you can. You can go to a site and pretend as if you're a newly vaccinated person and get what the person vaccinating you would think would be a first dose, but really is your third dose. But I'm just recommending that people not do that. Let's just hold tight, continue to practice good prevention, wear your mask, wash your hands, and watch your distance to other people, avoid the large, large crowds, and most people will be fine. If anything, what people need to focus on is getting those initial shots, not the booster. We all just need to be patient and see what they come back with.
And just pray that the FDA is not falling prey to any corporate pressures, right? Because that's part of the problem here. But, you know, I think we're going to work it all out.
Can I say something about that that was important? Mm-hmm. If that were to happen, this is the cool thing. The FDA, all of that data has to be reviewed by what's called the Data Safety and Monitoring Board. You know, so the FDA employees themselves, they're government employees. If anybody could be bought and paid for or muzzled, you would think it might be one of the employees. But a whole lot of people, a whole lot of good people would have to be involved in a conspiracy for that to happen in this day and time. The Data Safety and Monitoring Board is not made up of FDA employees. It is made up of external people, people who do not work for the FDA. And I've said this before, the president of Meharry serves on that Data Safety and Monitoring Board. There are multiple people of color on that Data Safety and Monitoring Board, and there are multiple white people on that board and people of all different races who operate with a very high level of integrity, who have chosen to stay on that board because in times like COVID, they said, I've got the boldness, I've got the courage to keep both doing the job and also to speak truth if anything happens that is inconsistent with the work that we did and the data that we reviewed and the recommendations that we ultimately made. So I don't think we have to worry about the FDA being bought and paid for and us getting bad information. A whole lot of really great people would have to be taken out in order for that to happen.
Well, everyone, pay attention, because they will have the hearing today. We will see what's going to happen. Now let's talk about Nicki Minaj. She has 157 million followers on Instagram alone. 157 million followers. She is a rapper and an artist of tremendous social influence. So she made headlines earlier this week when she noted in a tweet to a portion of her followers, and it spread like wildfire, that she would not be going to, she wouldn't be going to the Met Gala, which of course is one of the biggest events in the New York social season. Indeed, it's probably the highlight of the New York social season at this particular time. They required their attendees to be vaccinated. She's not gotten her shots yet. She said, quote, "I feel I've done enough research," so that's where she is with that. And she later issued a tweet sharing an unverified story, people are saying, about a cousin's friend in Trinidad. She asserted that the unidentified individual became impotent and his testicles became swollen after receiving the shot. Now, of course, this has unleashed a firestorm of controversy. Indeed, the White House has offered to answer her COVID questions, not a visit, but they said they will sit down and speak with her because she has 157 million followers on Instagram alone. So what do you think about this, everybody? And what is behind all of this? You know, let me start with you, Robert Petillo, because you host radio. And of course, Robert Petillo, host of his own show on WAOK. He's been doing morning duty this week. That's why we've not had him a lot on this show, because he's been on another. He's been doing his own show. But he is on WAOK every Sunday from 1 to 4 Eastern Standard Time. He's a Southeastern Regional Director for Rainbow Push, brilliant civil rights lawyer, Dr. Shanina Knight, an infection preventionist. Of course, she is a scholar at Case Western Reserve University. We've just been talking with Dr. Deborah Furholden, brilliant epidemiologist, associate dean of public health at Michigan State. Robert Petillo, what's your read on this?
I just find it very interesting, the intersection that we have between politics and celebrity culture in this country. during the last election, if you remember, before Joe Biden gave a sit-down interview to any major black journalist, he had a sit-down interview with Cardi B. Yeah. When Kamala Harris was speaking to the black community, they sent her on The Breakfast Club with Charlamagne the God and other entertainers instead of on a news program like your news program or my news program, where they could ask some questions, where they would get hard questions about what they would do for the black community. So for some reason, that was okay with the left-leaning media then, when they could use celebrity culture to push their messaging. However, now, when another celebrity is, you know, using their platform for political issues, all of a sudden when it's not serving their agenda, it becomes an issue. Then the contrapositive of that is the fact that we've had a 40-year culture war where Republicans have been fighting against hip-hop music and hip-hop lyrics and the over-sexualization of hip-hop and, you know, the booty shaking and rap videos and the objectification of women and all those sorts of things. And not to mention the way that they talk about the liberal elites and how they think they're better than the rest of people, you know, all those things. And then the second somebody sounds like they even somewhat support their side of the argument, that becomes the new leader, the new face of the party, new face of the movement, where you have Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens defending this person. They have them on every conservative website like Breitbart and The Blaze and so on and so forth. So I think for me, it points out the hypocrisy in our media landscape and in our political landscape. And not to mention, this is part of the reason we've had such an issue with this vaccine rollout, because people do not trust the government. They do not trust the government messengers. They do not trust the political leadership, because they sway in the wind depending on what happens one day to the next. We've never gotten any clear, concise messaging. And I think for many people, particularly the vaccine hesitant at this point, the message of just shut up and get it isn't exactly the most compelling way to convince them to do so. We're coming out of what I call Joe Biden's no good, very bad, terrible summer, where pretty much everything that could go bad did go bad for the administration. They need to get wins on the board. I'm pretty sure the last thing they wanted to be, the last fire they wanted to be putting out post-Labor Day, when they're trying to work on infrastructure, when they're trying to get the vaccine mandates rolling out, pretty sure the last thing they wanted to be doing was dealing with the Nicki Minaj gate scandal going on currently. So this may be a good time for us to look into the people we trust as messengers for our trusted messengers in the black community on policy. Malcolm X made this point years ago when they were talking about the Civil Rights Act, and Kennedy would have, you know, Lena Horne and Dizzy Gillespie, Louis Armstrong come to the White House. He made the point that no other community, when they need to speak to them, they invite a trumpet player or a ball player or a singer to be the people carrying policy and having discussions about what is best for their community. We have to take those words and heed them. And when the White House wants to talk about vaccines, they need to be talking to Deborah Furholden. They need to be talking to Leon McDougall. We need to make sure we have experts in the room. And also, when political leaders want to get their messaging out, we need to make sure they're going before real journalists and not before Cardi B and the Breakfast Club. Because when we have this intersection between policy and entertainment, you can't later on be mad when entertainers get into politics and they may not be the most informed as to what's going on.
What do you think, everybody? Call me at 773-763-9278, 773-763-9278. And the story just continued to get amped up. You know, we had Joy Reid who weighed in. We had Tucker Carlson who weighed in. We have had the White House to weigh in. What do you think? What do you think the impact is? And to be fair, Nicki Minaj has not said that she would never take the vaccine. She said she was doing research. And a lot of us really were put in that position last year because we didn't know and we could not get any answers. And a lot of answers were not had. But I want to know what your thinking is about all of this. What do you think about what she tweeted? Should she have the freedom to do it? And how is this all being managed? Let me go to you, Dr. Knighton, before we go to Dr. Deborah Furholden.
So I think the thing is we have to get to a point of where we do a better job of explaining science to the public. And we have to do a better job of explaining it in a way where it doesn't intersect with politics, right? So if you have a scientist that is sharing just the science, then we shouldn't be talking about presidents. We shouldn't be talking about political leaders. Yes, while there is some intersection between all of these layers, because we know that research influences policy and vice versa, we also have to understand that when you have citizens, Nicki Minaj is a citizen, just like many of us are citizens, she's being the voice of a population of individuals that are hesitant, that are refusing to take it. And instead of us looking at it and saying, oh, well, wow, she has all of these followers and they're going to get the wrong message, I think the biggest thing is to understand, why are they listening to her message? And is there anything in her message that does ring true? And if it does ring true, instead of trying to explain to someone why they should take the vaccine, to understand what is their hesitancy, like what's rooted in their hesitancy. So right now, one of the common arguments that I get, and I'm sure our listeners can probably relate, is that I remember the chickenpox parties, right? Hmm. So I remember the chickenpox parties, and if you got chickenpox, once you got chickenpox, that was it. And it's even now recommended by the CDC that if you got chickenpox, you don't need the chickenpox vaccine, right? And so many people have questions as to, hey, if I have had COVID already, then why is it that my immunity isn't good enough? They don't understand that there are different strains and variations like there is with the flu. And that, yes, while your reaction and your immunity may be built up against this particular strain, maybe against the next one, it's not. But then the question comes is that if we are having manufactured vaccines from March of 2020 that were deployed in December of 2020 to fight, you know, the previous strains of COVID, right? And people have had COVID and they've built up antibodies towards those. Should our research now be looking at, instead of saying, hey, we need boosters, why are we not having the conversations of annuals? Why are we not having the conversations around antibody tests to detect, you know, if people have, you know, built up antibodies in their system that would mean that maybe only need they need one dose opposed to two? So there are a lot of scientific questions that still remain that unfortunately we don't do a good job about helping the public to be able to understand where we are with the science. The other interfering factor is the media. So while the media can be used as a good tool to spread good messages, unfortunately, we know that when that FDA meeting happens today, the messages that are going to come out of that meeting, unfortunately, is going to be what people want to hear. It's not going to be what actually was said. If their mind is already fixated on something that they believe is supposed to happen, then that's going to be the message that is shared. And I'm constantly seeing that over and over again. I'll see someone report something on a scientific study, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, they missed the whole point of the study. But we have reporters that are not scientists, that are not collaborating with scientists to make sure that the right findings are shared.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's part of the problem. This has become like a media storm, Dr. Deborah Verholten. And instead of getting an opportunity, number one, I've not seen an interview with her. I mean, Dr. Knighton makes a point. I'd like to talk to her, hear her, and what in your experience has led you to this conclusion? You know, I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday. I said, we've got to stop labeling people and treating people as if they are stupid. And more than that, pounding on them as if they have no agency. That is a dangerous thing. And she has a lot of people. The CDC, her supporters went and picketed the CDC the other day in support of her. Dr. Deb, what is your takeaway with this?
Oh, I wish that somehow epidemiologists had the swag, the appeal.
You do. You do.
Of these folks.
You do. You and Dr. Knighton do. I mean, that's why Robert Pattillo
made the
point.
No, that's big facts, Dr. Deb.
We need to see you.
The point is, I know I'm cool. Right, I know what I'm putting down, but people ain't picking that up. That's the reality. You know, these people gain popularity because of their exceptional athleticism or their, cachet in music and those other things. So,
one of the things that we have learned with social media, because I don't even know if she has 157 million followers, because we find that a lot of these followers are bots and everything else. These folks can make a star anytime the Kardashians, who have no discernible talent, God bless them. Anytime they can, now they're great business persons, but talent is not what they've got. They can make a star. If they decided today, they could make decisions today to put you on television all day, every day. They could make that decision, but we don't see you on TV.
Santita.
Yeah.
So, but that's the thing, and Dr. Dev's point, BET not calling us up saying,
that's
like,
what I mean. I mean, it's a shame.
Come to the NAACP Awards. Like, nobody's calling us up saying, like, hey, we appreciate the scientists. You know, we appreciate the epidemiologists. We appreciate the nurses in our community and have ever had a platform for us to be celebrated. It's been all about the entertainment culture. And it's not to say any disrespect because I have my favorites. But it's like the same thing is no, our work does not get acknowledged across the board.
At all.
And it's all media, black media, mainstream media. Mm. And the people that have the mic are not the people that should have the mic for this conversation. But that's who has the mic, and that's who people are listening to. And so I remember I had a clash with Senator Nina Turner over this topic when Ice Cube came out and had put his two cents all in the mix with some of these politic things. See, I do believe with power comes responsibility. Mm-hmm. So I disagree with this whole, You know, you got the right to say and do what you want. I don't believe that. You know, I don't believe that. When I was a child, you know, there were conversations that were had, and my mother would say, I need you to leave the room. And my mother didn't want me to leave the room because she thought I was less than. My mother didn't want me to leave the room because I was inferior. My mother didn't want me in a grown folk conversation because as a child, once I heard that information, I was then accountable for it. Mm-hmm. And she didn't want me at 7 or 8 to have to be accountable for a conversation among 35 and 40-year-olds. It was unfair. It was an undue burden to put on a child. So now we've got these people who've got the mic, right? They got the mic. And they are putting conversations out pretending as if people aren't holding on to what they're saying as the holy grail. It's not being accountable for the responsibility that you have. It would be the equivalent of my aunts and uncles having those conversations with the children in the room. She has the right to grapple personally, and she could even grapple perhaps publicly. But here's the problem. All these people that grappled publicly, almost none of them came back after they got their vaccine and said, now here is where I am. See, I was responsible. I let people know honestly where I was. And I didn't make blanket statements like, I got to do more research. I said, I need to do more research, and this is the research I need to do. And then I did it. And then I shared with people what I got out of that research. And then I pointed them to the places where they could review the same thing that I reviewed. And then I shared my process and my journey and moving on that continuum. We are a year out. When she says, I got to do more research, on what, Nikki? What else do you need to know?
But you
say
know what?
That. Where yeah, are those sources?
You're right. But that's why I think it's irresponsible for media not to bring her on and talk to her. There are too many people who agree with her or at least say, you know, who are giving her space. So yes. I think instead of stirring up a media hornet's nest, I mean, about her, I want to.
And that's my argument, too. I agree.
I think that, you know, we're talking about her. We're not talking to her. And that's a problem. You know, because I am upset, or should I say I'm troubled by the fact that these major media companies, they don't bring people in. What they want to do is tell you, well, Joy Reid said this and Tucker Carlson said that. No. Why don't you ask her why she is mistrustful?
But think about it, though.
We could move much further. I got a minute.
In her space, though, think about it. So she's being told that she's going to be excluded from a major event that she's mm-hmm. been used to attending because she doesn't have a vaccine, okay? And the thing is that's what brings up the spark of the argument. And so I think we're forgetting just in terms of like, well, what is her rationale or what was her reason for saying something? And so I get it. You know, people are like, okay, well, hey, in that celebrity world, she's not there. Why are you not here? So maybe for her, her rationale was that she needed to speak up. And I always try to play devil's advocate in terms of, or I would say see both sides of the story rather. And I can see her side of like, hey, this is something that I'm used to attending. And now I can't attend because this is not my status and because I don't agree at this very point in time. Whereas others may say, hey, well, just sit out and stop fussing about it if you don't want to get the vaccine. But that's the same approach of just shut up and take the vaccine as well.
Well, you know, we're going to
see. I'm sure she's sure which tweet we're talking about. The Met tweet, I thought that was some of this other stuff. You know, people are adding mm-hmm. a lot to the body of, I can't even call it misinformation. I can only call it lies. It's like running into a crowd and yelling fire. If you say, my cousin, next door neighbor, babysitter, best friend, baby mama, friend, balls blew up because they got the vaccine, that's a lie. That didn't happen.
but you know what you do? What we used to do was talk. We used to interview people. Now we go online and see what they tweeted, and then that's the end of that. That is a mistake.
Yes.
You need to talk to people, right. Not about people. Talk to her and find out because
she. People.
Well, yeah, I will try. Because if anyone knows her, I would like to speak with her.
My last hit, Dr. Deb.
But you know, well, we'll talk about it during the break. But I want to talk about I want to know what got her here, and others. Let's talk about that, everybody. Stop talking about people. Start talking to them and with them and not at them and not down to them. We're going to be talking about President Biden and his poll numbers in this, too. So call us at 773-763-9278. Back in a minute.
Yes, we can. Change the world. Change the world. Change the world.
Oh, yes, we can.
We can change the world. We can change the world. Change the world.
We
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Santita Jackson Show, WCPT 820, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station, AM 950 Radio, the voice of progressive Minnesota. Want to hear your voices today? We've been talking about Nicki Minaj and the firestorm that she ignited this week with her tweets about COVID-19 vaccines, and it was an unverified story coming out of Trinidad. But I want to know what you think about the ensuing controversy and her worldview. But we're also talking about President Biden's falling poll numbers. He is polling at 42% approval. That is not going to help us in the 2022 midterm season. While the party in power holding the presidential office, well, they typically lose the midterms, but wow, what will this mean? This is not good, but we're trying to figure out how he can recover today. You know, we always try to leave things on an up note. And so I want you to call me at 773-763-9278, 773-763-WCPT. If you want to text me, GWC Injury Lawyers gives you that opportunity. But I want to hear your voices today. I want to hear what your thoughts are about the president's falling poll numbers. What is happening, everybody? Meet my morning stars on the Santita Jackson and Friends page. Meddy and Jewel and Mark and Joyce and Paula and Jewel and so many, Vicky, so many of you. Like and share. Dave Dowling up in the north. Linda, Norma Jean, Karen, so many of you. Please like and share. And, you know, we're going to be looking at the Justice for J6 rally tomorrow in Washington, D.C., what will happen there. And, of course, the FDA are meeting today to debate booster shots. Two of the top officials in the FDA resigned last week, and they have come out. They are signatories on a very, very thorough letter and a stunning letter, really saying that we don't need COVID-19 vaccine boosters, not at this time. And that came out in The Lancet, which is one of the world's leading medical journals. So we're going to continue to look out for those stories and more. And we also want to know why Haitians are being deported back to a country that is struggling. That is what is happening right now. And so the people are calling on the president to stop deporting Haitians. Let me bring on our beloved. Of course, every Wednesday we have legal Q&A with CK on the Santita Jackson Show. We're so excited to have her do that every Wednesday. But you know what? I have to tell you, she is going to be on Court TV. She is on Court TV regularly in a couple of minutes. Talk to me, CK. What are you going to be talking about today, and what time can we catch you?
Absolutely, Santita. And, you know, this is something that I do, I enjoy doing. It sharpens my skills and keeps me on the cutting edge of what's happening in trials when I'm not trying cases, certainly. And today, I'm going to be discussing two, possibly three quick cases. The first is Stanley Ford. Stanley Ford is a gentleman in Akron, Ohio, who faces the death penalty for allegedly multiple arson, killing 9 people and 1 family of 7. And these are all African-American families. So it's really, really, it hits home in terms of the tragedy of it. And it really, really is a very, very, very difficult case to see, because you look at all the evidence in the case. And what I do is I basically give commentary on the witnesses, commentary on the lawyer's performance, all different aspects of a trial, because I've been a trial lawyer for so long. And then the second case was made famous by a movie called The Jinx. It's the Robert Durst trial. Robert Durst is an elderly gentleman who's being accused of murdering his best friend, who allegedly provided an alibi for his alleged murder of his wife some, you know, decades ago. And in the course of him providing insight to this movie, The Jinx, he contradicted himself, and that gave rise to them discovering evidence, which led to this criminal trial out in California. And we're expecting actually the jury to closing arguments, and the jury will get the call to render a verdict soon. And the third case is R. Kelly's case. I've been following this case because I sometimes appear twice a week on Court TV, and I'm in the R. Kelly case, which is tragic. We've followed R. Kelly for years. He's probably one of the most outstanding entertainers of all time, talented, but he has allegations against him, which have been longstanding, of abusing young girls and young boys. And so this trial is not just a trial against relative to his alleged abuse of these young girls and mature women and boys, but also this is a RICO case. There's enough evidence, they believe, and so it is in the state of New York, the prosecutors, of a pattern and practice of his criminal activity. So it is novel. And, you know, the community, there are people who really support R. Kelly in this endeavor, but there are a lot of people who feel that his luck is going to run out. As you know, he has been charged previously, and he's been able charged and gone to trial. And he's beat every trial against him for similar allegations. But this is on a different level. We expect the prosecutors to rest either today or Monday, and then the defense will begin. He's defended by some extraordinarily talented African-American lawyers and others. And so this really, this case is of particular interest to me for so many reasons, looking at the evidence. You know, I want people to have a fair trial, but I can tell you the evidence is stacked against them in a mighty way. So those are the three cases I expect to talk about today. And then, Santita, I'm also going to be appearing on Monday from 10 to 12. Today, it's from 9 to 10 on Court TV.
Eastern?
You can access Court TV Eastern Time. Yeah, okay. 9 to 10. And then on Monday, because I've got some other obligations, usually I do a two-hour block, it's 10 to 12. And what I like about Court TV's format is that they really bring in, you know, varying points of views on litigation, trial skills, evidence. And then they ask your opinion on these different things and how you call the case. And, of course, I love doing that. If you're a trial lawyer, you love the mystery of that. It also, it forces you to sharpen your own skills, you know, and it's great. I've been a trial lawyer for so many years, so this is just another way of speaking, you know, my truth, because I do believe that everyone deserves a fair trial. And even when you, in this country, you commit, there are allegations that you committed a heinous crime, as in these cases,
sure.
But it's important to see how the jury looks at that and the different variables. In the R. Kelly case, there are no cameras in the courtroom, so we are not able to get, you know, the vision of what's happening. And the Robert Durst case, we're in the courtroom. This elderly gentleman who actually took the position, his lawyer took the position, he may actually die because he was so frail if he got up on direct examination. In a criminal case, it's rare that you take, that the defendant takes a stand, but he chose to take the stand, and they just said, oh, he may not make it, he's so frail. He was on the stand for almost 13 days. So there you have it. And so it's very, very interesting. And
today,
thank you, Santita, for giving me the opportunity.
Of course, we want to know. We want to know at 8 o'clock today, Central Standard Time, 9 o'clock, Eastern Standard Time, she will be on Court TV and again on Monday. So from 10 to 12 on Monday, which is 9 to 11 our time. So everybody, as soon as this show is over, run on over to Court TV so you can see CK. I know Paul is going to be the first one there. We know this. And Meddy and Jewel and everyone. Well, we love it. And send emails and let them know that you want to see more of CK Hoffler on Court TV. Everybody, sending you much love, CK. I know you got to go and prep for
it. Thank you.
You know that, just like she's going to trial. So there we
Absolutely.
Go. Everybody, let's talk about President Biden's approval rating. It slips to 42% in the Quinnipiac poll of American adults released this week. 42% approve of his overall performance. What is going on? Is it Afghanistan? Is it the lack of traction on voting rights? Is it? What is it? How do you go from 80 million votes, not even a year ago, to a 42% approval rating? Everybody liked him until he decided to get out of a war. So the military-industrial complex, which has a lot of power in the media, they've kind of come down on him. Not kind of, they absolutely have. Many progressives are saying you need to suspend the filibuster and get some key pieces of legislation through while we control the House and the Senate. I mean, it's a 50-50 split, and you need to press Senators Sinema and Manchin to get done what we need to get done. Now, you know that's politics. People pull stuff out on you all the time. That's not happening. So is that what has pushed his ratings down? Wow. Only 34% of respondents approved of him on foreign policy. 59% disapproved. There is a lot going on, and so I want to go to this brilliant panel to talk about it because I think we need to break all of this down. We do need to break all of this down. Of course, Dwight McKee, social scientist, brilliant social scientist, and we've got Robert Petillo, host of his own show on WAOK on Sunday from 1 to 4 Eastern Standard Time, Southeastern Regional Director from Rainbow Push, brilliant civil rights lawyer. We've got Aaron Connolly, yet another brilliant lawyer and political strategist. Indeed, Covenant Strategies is the company that she has founded and she works in the trenches in politics. She is a bona fide political organizer. Gotta know what she sees. And, of course, David Daley, Fair Vote, the author of the best-selling Rat Aft, Why Your Vote Doesn't Count, and Unrigged, How Americans Are Battling Back to Save Democracy. Where do we begin? Let me start with you. Set the table for us, Robert Petillo. His falling poll numbers, where are they coming from? And will this hurt us in 2022?
Well, I think Joe Biden has to worry about getting through the fall before he even thinks about getting to 2022. Because let's understand, Joe Biden had a terrible, no good, very bad summer. Everything that could go wrong did go wrong. If you look at the unemployment numbers that they thought they would have, they didn't get a third of it. If you look at the herd immunity that they thought they'd be reaching to 70% vaccine dosage by July the 4th, we haven't reached that, and it's after Labor Day now. If you look at legislatively, they came out in June and said they had an agreement on the infrastructure bill, both the hard infrastructure bill, the $1.2 trillion, and the human infrastructure bill, the reconciliation bill, $3.5 trillion. That's been held up by Joe Manchin. We also have the other agenda items, the progressives. You know, the whole reason that people got up out of bed in November and in January to give them the Senate was for things like student loan reform, was for things such as the climate change agenda. The region had record African-American turnout that really did swing the Senate, particularly in the case of Senator Warnock, was because we thought we were getting things such as voting rights, the For the People Act, the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act, those sorts of things. So that legislative agenda had already ground to a halt because of Biden's refusal to push for the end of the filibuster. And because of the recalcitrance of Prime Minister Joe Manchin and head of state Christian Sinema, who have taken the leadership role in the party and being able to put the kibosh on almost any piece of legislation. So Joe Biden hasn't got a big legislative win, nothing you can have a great press conference on, pretty much since the last stimulus bill, which was very early in the administration. You add in the vaccine mandates, which nobody wants to have, but have become increasingly necessary, and the fact that we have not gone back to normal yet. Most people want to be back to normal. They want kids in school. They want to be walk around without mask on, but at the same time, they don't want to have to take the vaccine. Then the person, and even though it's a natural disaster, an international pandemic, that still gets blamed on the person at the top, as Truman had on his desk, the buck stops here. And you take all that and then put on top of it the Afghan withdrawal, which was not completely his fault because of the deal that Trump put into place, but nobody cares what the last guy did. They care what you're going to do about it. And the bungling of the Afghan withdrawal and the death of those 13 soldiers, everything came together in a confluence that led to these poll numbers. So I think for the fall, Joe Biden is going to have to concentrate on pushing through that domestic agenda, because we all know after Labor Day and the year before a midterm election, you got about 90 days after that to get your entire agenda through before the entirety of Congress goes into re-election mode, and you're not going to be able to rename a post office after the beginning of 2022, because every single congressperson is going to be in full-blown, full-time campaign mode. So he's going to have to get on his horse. He's going to have to get people like Christian Sinema, Joe Manchin, any other recalcitrant Democrats on board. They're going to have to repeal the filibuster, and you have to push through some of those big ticket domestic agenda items, because without doing so, you got no points on the board, and you send these people out to here back to their districts with only a 5-seat majority in the House and a 50-50 tie in the Senate, and telling them to hold the line versus the conservative media that has a concerted effort to ensure that they win going forward, and also the Trump administration is still running a VC government in the background, undermining every legislative action taken by this administration. So it's going to take work, and they're going to have to get on their horses right now.
Did you predict it wouldn't happen? You said it will be a Vichy government, you know, government in exile, everybody. Well, that's what we've got with President Trump. Erin Connolly, your thoughts. How do we get from 80 million votes to 42%? 58% underwater. Right.
Yeah, I think Robert's comments are right on as usual. I think what I'd like to add to the conversation is we have to keep in mind the state of mind of the folks answering this poll. Right. This is not a normal year. People are experiencing anxiety, frustration. Unemployment benefits just ran out. We do have a proposition on the table to extend those unemployment benefits. Small business owners are panicking about the vaccine mandate if they're coming up close to 100 employees and how they implement testing for those employees and keep their struggling businesses afloat. And I think what we're seeing now with these poll numbers is just complete frustration with the process. It underlines the concerns that folks who are not engaged in policy on a daily basis have with the government, right? There's a natural distrust in general. That's how we saw President Trump rise to power in the first place. And it's time for action on the filibuster. It's time for action on voting rights. People that, even the most staunch Democrats who are knocking on doors for President Biden are frustrated by the fact that we still don't have protections on our basic right to vote. And when we see two senators holding up everyone else, that seems like the president doesn't have the power to move the needle in the way that the people want. So I think we're getting those folks that are on the middle left and the left extremely frustrated with the lack of action. At the same time, we have everyone in the country in this kind of pandemic flux syndrome, a term that was coined by the Washington Post. And we want to get back to normal, but we don't want to eat our vegetables in order to do it, right? We want the dessert, but we don't want to finish our plate. And as a mom, that analogy seems pretty apt to me. I think we are kind of, what these poll numbers say, I think, to some extent, are just the American people's frustration. And with the foreign policy numbers, the lack of understanding of a full picture, to be honest with you. I'm not saying that not everyone understands it, but the geopolitical landscape and the issue with Afghanistan is such a complicated one. It's a 20-year quagmire. And as a military family, I believe that President Biden made the responsible decision. The way that it was handled was not ideal. He was put in a tough position. And I think the messaging around that withdrawal could have been done in a much more strategic way. I think we could have secured our allies who are on the ground, and we see folks that, again, are staunch Democrats who support the president, frustrated with that process, still trying to get friends and their families out of Afghanistan before the Taliban threatens their life. So I think it's an issue more of, it was almost impossible this summer for even his supporters to publicly support every aspect of his policy choices. I think he has an opportunity to turn this around. I think while nobody wants to have a vaccine mandate, you know, I think the tough love will actually work from a public health perspective in some fashion. When we see employers, for example, make sure that they're providing either a penalty or some sort of new rule like Delta Airlines, they see their employees respond for the most part to get the vaccine or to willingly take part in these tests without surrendering their job. So I think that there is hope that we can turn the tide in this pandemic with some of these rules. But as we all know, the American people do not like being told that they have to do something. And so I think this is the initial backlash on that tough love. Hopefully what we'll see is by the time we get to November, December, when we're going to be at real risk for huge spread of the Delta variant, and God willing, not another variant, that we will have enough people vaccinated to stop another surge like that. The other thing parents are concerned about, and I'm a parent myself, my child is in in-person school, and luckily we are in a district that has strict mask enforcement policies, testing of students, vaccine mandates for teachers and staff, but there are still breakthrough infections that are happening. So parents are scared. If you have children under 12, it's a whole different world out there. I have a child under 12. I think the frustration that we haven't seen a vaccine approved for children is a flashpoint for many folks that I talk to. And I would like to look at those poll numbers and see how many of those folks are the ones really frustrated with the president's approach to the pandemic.
Because perhaps we need to look to Cuba
as a parent.
Well, perhaps we need to look to Cuba because they're vaccinating infants, right? But they have developed their own vaccine. And I'd like to know if it's an mRNA vaccine. I think, you know, that's why we need to have transparency with all of the recipes so that we can find out what works where and with whom. You know, this one size fits all. It's not working. It's not.
I don't believe that vaccine has been peer-reviewed or analyzed in the way that the FDA would ideally want, but I would like to look into that data, and hopefully the FDA, when they're meeting today to talk about boosters, have some, at least some hope for parents who are really struggling with children under 12, especially
Aaron,
if children are immune compromised in any way. It's you can't leave your house.
You're right, but Aaron, we've all been in a clinical trial. So none of this stuff, I mean, we're just working those pieces out like right now. You see what I mean?
Right.
So it's, I'm just saying, because in Cuba, they have one of the most advanced medical systems in the world. There is a doctor on every corner. People farm out Cuban doctors all over the world whenever there's an emergency. They are that qualified. I'd like to know what's working there, just as they need to know what's working here. Because they worked out. We need to know. I mean, medicine is medicine. You got to pass the same exams. You know, a doctor is a doctor wherever you go. So I want to know what is working and where. How is it? Why are they confident in vaccinating babies? You know, and parents are taking them there. They don't have the same kind of hesitancy, as at least as my reading of the news. And I'd like to know what's going on. We're going to hear from David Daly and Dwight McKee on the other side. We want to talk about these falling poll numbers with President Biden. What is going on? 42%, 80 million% last year. I mean, we were just so revved up. It's only been a year. Couldn't wait to vote in November. And it wasn't even close, at least in terms of the popular vote. But now something else is going on. Something else is going on, and where will that lead us in 2022, which is, as you correctly noted, Robert Petillo, it's just 90 days away. Everybody's going to be in reelection mode in about 5 minutes. Back with more of the Santita Jackson Show.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Amen, everybody. Welcome back to the Santita Jackson Show on WCPT, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station, and AM 950 radio, the voice of progressive Minnesota. We've been talking with Aaron Connolly, attorney Aaron Connolly, Covenant Strategies, brilliant political organizer and lawyer. And we've been talking with attorney Robert Petillo, host of his own show on WAOK, the iconic Atlanta radio station, every Sunday from 1 to 4 Eastern Standard Time, 12 to 3 Central Standard Time. Of course, Southeastern Regional Director of Rainbow Push, Dwight McKee, brilliant social scientist. And we've got you, David Daly, rat-effed and unrigged. Boy, oh boy. Did you see this coming, David? 42%, 58% underwater, 42% above water. What is going on with President Biden, and how will this impact the midterms or the rest of his term, for that matter?
Yeah. Good morning, everybody. You know, I think you've got a brilliant panel, as always. And I think
you are in it.
So much of what we have heard this morning is right on target, and I echo the analysis of my friends. Yes, I think we should have seen this coming for a couple of reasons, right? And the first reason is that we've seen this show before. It was called the Obama administration. And we watched the strategy of Republicans in Congress and in state houses and the way that they obstructed and refused compromise, refused to work together, and used all the power that they had to slow processes down or get in the way. And so while I certainly feel that Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema are two huge problems, I don't think we should ignore the fact that on a question of something as big and important as voting rights, you can't get a single Republican vote in the House or the Senate. So let's start there. It is a complete blockade on one side, which means that you've got a couple of Democrats who are standing in the way, stopping the process. But if there were any Republicans who were willing to work together on an issue that in 2006, the Voting Rights Act is reauthorized and it is not contentious, and it's 98-0 in the Senate, and it's like 390-33 in the U.S. House. And 15 years later, you can't get a single Republican vote on this. Now, what I would say is Joe Biden should have seen this coming because he was at Barack Obama's side during that administration. He has seen the Republican playbook. And yet Biden came into office, right, saying, I can work with these guys. I've got the magic ticket. You put me in a room with Mitch McConnell, I'll make a deal. I'll get the job done. I can convince Joe Manchin to come along on this stuff. I can change the politics of this. And a lot of us said, yeah, you know, I'm not so sure you can, because we know what Mitch McConnell does, and that is to obstruct and to make it look like you are ineffective so that his side can then call you the problem, win the midterm, win the next election. And here we are, right? We are 8 months into this term. The window for progress is closing, but the window for understanding the nature of the opposition should have closed on the very first day. And I think that's what's so frustrating to a lot of us is that we saw what was coming. We recognized the need for quick and immediate action on the things that were promised, on voting rights, which people turned out in Georgia because we were guaranteed that if Democrats took the Senate, there would be progress on these things. And here Democrats are, right, with both houses and the White House, but they're not able to pass anything. And we all see the reason why. It is the combination of 100% Republican obstructionism with the refusal of the Democratic Party to recognize this and then say, well, we're going to have to change the filibuster rules to do something about it. And they're going to head into the midterms in a year in which they're likely to lose the House simply due to redistricting alone. They're going to head into the midterms with what is their message? You give us absolute power and, well, you've got to give us five more senators if you want us to actually get anything done. That is a losing, losing message.
And it's a losing practice. I mean, because we actually over-index in terms of representation. I mean, in terms of the people we represent. Please give us those numbers again, David, before I go to Dwight.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if
you can't say them enough to me. You can't say them enough.
I mean, you have you have 50 Democrats and 50 Republicans in the U.S. Senate, except the 50 Democrats represent 41.5 million more people, right? I mean, Democrats in the U.S. House won 4.7 million more votes than Republican candidates. But when you change the maps in redistricting in a handful of key states this year, you could rerun that election, and simply due to new district lines in places like Texas, North Carolina, Georgia, Florida alone, you could rerun the same election on new maps, and those 4.7 million votes for the Democrats would still lead to a Republican House. We see what's going on, you know, with regards to gerrymandering and redistricting right now in Ohio and Nebraska and Texas and all of these states where Republicans are really using their influence to try to lock in gains for another decade. We know the numbers in state houses around the country, which after the 2018 election, there were 59 million Americans who lived in a state in which one or both chambers of the state legislature were controlled by a party that won fewer votes. And every one of those 59 million of us lived in a state in which Democratic candidates won more votes, but Republican candidates had the power. You've got a Supreme Court, which five of the six conservative justices have been appointed by U.S. presidents who lost the popular vote. The urgency to do something about voting rights, the urgency is right now, because this is this might be the only opportunity Democrats have. So when this time gets squandered, when 8 months go by, when the nature of the opposition, which is so clear to us, isn't countered effectively with a strategy of the Democrats' own, you begin to wonder exactly what the motivation is, what the plan is. And, you know, I don't think it's hyperbole to say that people who worry that this kind of soft or hard authoritarianism can't happen here, they're not looking around at what is happening in state legislatures around the country. What happened on January 6th is a dry run. It was a dress rehearsal for what will happen in 2024 if the election is close again, but Republicans control the House, or if they are able to get through and continue passing some of these bills in state legislatures on voter suppression, on takeover of local county election boards, or as folks in Wisconsin or Arizona have talked about, changing the nature of how electoral college votes are even allocated or who is in control of awarding them. This is a five-alarm fire. And if we're not dealing with it in that way, when we have the chance, you might not get that chance again.
Dwight McKee, your thoughts? Will says Dems do not understand how to use power. Yeah, they do. They know how to crush. They know how to crush progressives. They just keep protecting corporate power. And I think we need to acknowledge that, everybody. You know, you increasingly have two parties of two different names but one agenda. But we're not anywhere. You know, we are on the table to be eaten. We're not sitting at the table to partake in the power. Dwight McKee, why is he at 42%?
Well, the truth of the matter is Biden never was a popular candidate. He was a viable candidate. He was really the beneficiary of the antipathy that people had for Trump. And so people voted for him not because they liked him as much as they believe he could win. They disliked Trump so much that he became a viable alternative. But even in the primaries, he was never the most popular candidate. He was just a candidate that people thought was the most acceptable candidate and a candidate that people thought had the best chance against Trump. But what you're finding out is Waters hits his own level. Now he's really operating on his own and without the the benefit of the hate people have for Trump, and he has a stand on his own. Now you see the true mediocrity come forth that has always been there, that we've experienced for the last 40 years with this guy. The same guy with the crime bill. The same guy who rose up with against Anita Hill and rose up with Clarence Thomas. He has always been as much a Republican as a Democrat. And he has always tried to play mainstream politics, never with a real intense progressive agenda. He's always been much more reactionary, much more mainstream. He's always played up to the right. So all we're doing is seeing the real Biden come forth and settle into his true character, true nature, and who he really is.
773-763-WCPT. What do you think about that? Why is President Biden underwater, and what can he do to get his head above water? Robert?
Well, as I think what Biden has to do is double down and triple down on that domestic agenda, because as we've all said, after the next 90 days, all he'll be able to do is govern through executive order and then nibble around the edges, those sorts of things. And I think effectively by the end of this year, the House could be lost if they don't push through some big agenda items. But you have to look at the power of the presidency and see exactly where he can make big progress. He, more than likely, I think it hasn't been tested yet, but he could probably cancel all student loan debt through the executive office and not need Congress to do so. Do that now, by all means. You know, anywhere that you can get some points on the board, do something about the border crisis. Go down to Central America and Mexico, work out a negotiated deal to stop the cartels and to stop the waves of immigrants, and get those optics under control. You don't really need Congress to for that, even though you will be nice to have a comprehensive immigration plan in place with a pathway to citizenship and something for the Dreamers. If you can simply stop the migrant caravans at the borders, then you get that issue off the board. Find out what you can do about criminal justice reform. You can legalize marijuana from the executive branch on the federal level and just take that issue off the board. Do some popular things to get some points going, because look, I'm a Falcons fan. We are used to losing. We do it all the time. I can tell people the best ways to lose. I can tell you new creative ways to lose you never thought about. And what I can tell you right now is the strategy the administration has right now is a losing strategy, and they're going to have to get points on the board.
Aaron, where do we go from here? Because this is, I'm just, when David gives us some numbers, when we hear these talking points from all of you, I don't hear the Democrats putting that message out. And when you are out here organizing, what are you saying? Because there's a disconnect between what we hear from people like you and what we're not hearing from the Democratic Party. I mean, these Republicans are out here all day, every day. They are. What's going on?
Well, and they always, the Republicans have their talking points down. They hold the line in Congress. They are, I think the executive orders are one way that we can move forward and gain some momentum. I think additionally, we from the White House, we can't care so much what the opposition thinks. It's if you look at other countries, they are dumbfounded by the fact that the majority is letting the minority govern. It goes against principles of basic power. And we are giving them, feeding them their talking points. We are ceding the floor by not taking the power that we have. And I think if we can build some of that momentum and then on the back end explain why it's working, that needs to be the approach. Then this constant concern of bipartisanship when the partner is operating in bad faith. You can't negotiate in bad faith with someone, right? So take the power that you have in the meantime, build some of that momentum, and then come back to the table when they understand who they're dealing with. right now we're saying, oh, well, what do you think? Why are we asking the minority at this point? Why are we giving them that power? And I think that is a frustration that many regular Americans feel, independents, Republicans, that are saying, you're not even taking the lead when you have it. How can we trust you again?
It's David not, Daly.
They don't see that bipartisanship, right?
Well, I mean, because it's crazy, though. I mean, Aaron, we have the numbers.
Right.
I mean, I'm stepping
until
out of the wall
this
here.
Until the gerrymandering happens, and that's the big concern, and I think I'm glad that that was discussed, because these maps will determine the next 10 years, and that will be an uphill battle that organizers will have to fight on the ground. So let's fix the maps. Let's make that a fair process. There's mm-hmm. groups and organizers out at these meetings, county meetings, state meetings, where they're trying to essentially draw these crazy maps that will steal these votes. That's what it's doing. And that's the danger. We need to pass the Voting Rights Act. That is how we can be sure to stop some of the bleeding here. And if that doesn't get done, I'm really, really afraid of what will be next for us. Because David is right. These in the states, this is the real danger.
Well David, what is the danger?
They could do something about it right now. Do something about it right now.
What could they do?
They could pass the For the People Act. They could pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. And they could, along the way of doing that, those bills contain really good provisions that would put an end to partisan gerrymandering, and they would restore the full protections of the Voting Rights Act that John Roberts and his gang of thugs in robes on the Supreme Court have eviscerated over the course of the last 8 years since the Shelby County case. You could restore preclearance. You could restore the full protections of Section 2, which were gutted in the Brnovich case over the summer. And this would go a long way. This is not a hypothetical at this point in time. You look around the country and you can see what is happening in state capitals. Nebraska, right? You don't think of Nebraska as a deeply gerrymandered state. But what is unique about Nebraska? It awards one electoral college vote to the winner of the district in Omaha. In 2000, that district went to Joe Biden. And you now have Republicans in Nebraska who are trying to draw a line through Omaha in such a crazy way as to ensure that they get that electoral vote. Okay, you want to know why that one electoral vote matters so much? Joe Biden won the popular vote by about 7.5 million votes in 2020. He won the Electoral College by 44,000 votes in three states, Georgia, Arizona, and Wisconsin, three states in which we have seen the kind of voter suppression activity in the months since this election. If those three states, which were super close, right, 10,000 votes here, 15,000 votes there, if those three states go the other way in 2024, or if they had in 2020, okay, if those states go the other way in 2020, the Electoral College would have been 270 to 268.
Oof.
So that single vote in Nebraska, if Biden doesn't get that, it's a 269-269 tie, in which case the election goes to the House of Representatives, which does not vote on the basis of a vote for each member. It votes on the basis of each delegation votes, and then you get and the state vote goes to the winner of the delegation count. So in a state like Wisconsin, which Biden wins, but has been gerrymandered so that Republicans have all of the, you know, a majority in Congress, that state would have gone for Trump. Trump would have won the election if this had been the case. And this is what they are setting up. for next time. And they're focused on it, right? They are so focused on this that they are redrawing this line in Omaha, Nebraska.
We've got the power to put an end to this. But David,
we've got the power to put an end to it, and we're not doing it.
Well, why not? I've got one minute for you, and then I'm going to give another minute to Dwayne.
Yeah.
Okay, you know what? I'm going to start reaching out to the DNC. Because I don't understand, with all the information that you give, David, 40-plus million vote, 41 million more vote people that we represent in the U.S. Senate, 4 million more people plus that we represent in the U.S. House of Representatives, I don't understand the strategy. Instead of playing these culture wars...
The strategy should have been on day one, you add Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico as states. Washington, D.C., a city which is larger than the state of Wyoming, which has two U.S. senators, while Washington, D.C. has none. Puerto Rico, which has a population that is larger than about 22 American states. And then you could have provided some balance back to the U.S. Senate. And they've got to do something about the U.S. Supreme Court that does not pack the court. The packing of the court has already been done by Mitch McConnell. You've got to right size and reform the court in such a way that you no longer have these rogue ideologues who have effectively become another branch of the Republican Party that has become, you know, veto power over the entire progressive and democratic agenda. These were the things that had to be done in the first weeks, and here we are 8 months in, and we are no closer.
I mean, and here we were partying after the inauguration, you know, styling, profiling on social media, saying, isn't it so great that we've got, you know, we're making history. What? We now have
a
smash up.
Power, but then you have to use power.
Oh,
I could see what's not done, Santita.
Dwight, I've got 1 minute. It belongs to you.
Because...
And everybody, if you can, stay with me afterwards on Santita Jackson and Friends, because I want to continue this conversation for about 10 minutes. That's all. Dwight McKee, 1 minute. It's yours.
Because Biden is a closet Republican. And when we come to that reality, we will understand what's going on. He has the same belief system, in a real sense, that McConnell and them had. He really believed that mainstream America should stay in charge. And he plays the mainstream America, which is white America. Now, he's not a white supremacist, but he does believe in the Republican philosophies of, you know, conservative government, of non-progressive government, of government that should be laissez-faire government. I mean, he is the same kind, the same guy that he was 40 years ago. And so he would never fight for progressive issues. He's never fought for progressive issues. The reason Obama had him on the ticket in the first place is because he was trying to play to the conservative whites and Republican whites and middle-of-the-line whites. He was there to balance the ticket with Obama. He has never been that guy.
Well, stay right there. Stay right there. You know, I got a hard break. Everybody, have a great weekend. I'll see you on Keep Up Alive with Reverend Jesse Jackson on Sunday at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time. But stay right here on the Santita Jackson and Friends page. Got this tremendous panel. Got to get closing thoughts from them until Sunday and then Monday. God bless you, everybody. Have a great weekend. Stay right here.